Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with the talented Justin Nimmergood.
How's it going? Going well. Happy Monday and happy October, everyone. Hope everyone had a fabulous weekend. Is excited for another great month here.
It is another great month, and things are starting to cool down a little bit down here in Texas, and I'm sure things are just lovely out there in Orange County or wherever you may be in California this week.
We must have stole the heat from you then, because we've got almost 90 degrees today, Bruce. So I don't know what's going on, but probably temporary.
And a rare turnaround here. Yeah, a rare flip. Well, folks, we have a fantastic guest on our show today. I've always been partial to executive coaches, and I've done some work in my past with some of the larger financial folks, like the Goldmans and the Deloittes, and our guest has a background in that, but also is executive coach and has a lot to share with us today. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce to our listeners Marissa Murray. Welcome to the Concierge.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce and Justin. I'm really thrilled to be here with you.
Well, great. Thanks for being here. And just kind of start and kind of tell our listeners about what, your background. Sounds like you had a fascinating background in business, and talk a little bit about that and how that's progressed into where you're at today with your coaching practice.
Sure, absolutely. So I was a chemical engineer out of university. So I started the beginning of my career doing engineering roles for about 5 years. Process engineering roles and environmental engineering roles at a number of manufacturers, as well as in the auto industry. And then I decided to do my MBA. And following my MBA, I joined Anderson Consulting at the time, which of course became Accenture, and spent 15 years there, starting out in kind of system integration, large technology implementations, operations projects, supply management, optimization, bunch of global transformation initiatives with lots of Fortune 100 clients. I left as the aerospace lead, actually, so I always sort of kept my technical background in a lot of the clients that I served. I left for a role at a telecom company as the vice president of their business-to-business sector, which was another very challenging, very client-facing role. And 3 years ago, I decided to begin doing executive coaching. So I did my executive coaching certification and began serving clients in that capacity. So initially, I actually thought I was going to be doing more strategic consulting, but then I fell in love with executive coaching. I fell in love with the curriculum, and I decided that's kind of what I wanted to focus on with this client base. So really thrilled to be sort of have found coaching. I actually benefited from coaching quite a bit. I had three executive coaches sort of as I was accepting higher and higher leadership roles. And all of those experiences were really fantastic, but I didn't really know what they were doing. I knew it was good, and I didn't know what they were really doing to me. And then when I sort of sat on the other side of the table and found all the psychology and also just all of the faculties around getting to your highest performance, I really fell in love with this kind of work.
Well, that's fantastic. Going back to your Accenture days, it sounds like you were Anderson to Accenture, went up all the way to a managing director. Now, had you ever thought about, sounds like, were you ever in the pipeline to become a partner or a principal type of thing, or?
I should have said, so the managing director role is a partner level role. So they just, after they went public, they started calling it managing directors. But yeah, I was a partner at Accenture. So I actually had executive coaching when I was up for partner and as an executive coach when I made partner. So yeah, that was an incredible milestone and a very competitive process to achieve that, which was really wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that, because I know different financial, the managing director company, position can be that position that's kind of right there. That's kind of the, level, but sometimes they're not considered an equity player. You know what I mean? It's more of a strong employee.
I do. They keep changing the names.
Absolutely. I know, right? I'm kind of a maven and aficionado of that. Of that area, but that's amazing. I don't want to go back too much, but man, to make that transition from that, if you will, to another company, it must have been. I'd love to hear some of the factors involved. Whether it could have been just a better challenge, more growth, but anyway, I just
yeah. Well, I'm happy. I'm happy to elaborate if you want. I mean the. Sure. I think that it's not an uncommon story in consulting. I was a bit of a road warrior, as most of us are in consulting. And so I had a very large global team. I was in India very, very often for a couple of weeks, every 6 weeks. I had kind of global responsibility. So I'd kind of grown out of my region. And so it was a bit of a lifestyle thing to make that shift to be sort of more locally based. But I was kind of happier in terms of the career progression, the quality of the work when I was with Accenture. So, I kind of took a turn and then I decided to take another turn after I went into industry.
No, that's fantastic. That you're so right. I mean, many folks in the consulting world are road warriors, and when you do take on a global role, or like you're a lead client service partner or whatever, and taking on a global role, particularly that India run can be a little can be a little much there. And no, totally understand where you're coming from. So wow, Justin, our guest has a lot of, you and Justin have the MBA, and Justin's done some similar work and what you've done, Justin.
Yeah, similar work. I appreciate your perspective, Marissa, because it's I'll tell you, making that jump and taking that journey is not an easy one, especially if you look at the kind of the ingrained what's in society today and what has been for quite some time. The old adage, go to school, get a good job, right, and work that job through. Then, I found myself, especially as an educated professional, with a lot of backlash, actually, and be curious to hear your perspective on that, actually, as you share some more here today, just on what that was like for you as you, hit some of these milestones, made some of these pivots and changes in your career.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, it's interesting because I think that, I was very, very fortunate in the sense that I had, great opportunities. I had incredible sponsorship, obviously, that supported me in putting me on challenging roles and also promoting me as they sort of recognized my contribution. So it's interesting when you navigate sort of outside of that network, outside of sort of those direct sponsors, how much of a growth opportunity that really is, right? And so if I'm not sure which transition you want to talk about, but this transition for me from sort of taking that, the corporate roles, staying in a corporate environment to focusing on the work I do now, which is really my own company, focusing on executive coaching. I mean, that was an enormous leap. It was fraught with a lot of skepticism from a lot of people. A lot of people started calling it lots of other things, including a middle age crisis. But I prefer to refer to it as a middle age awareness moment. one of the toughest things for me was you know, I had a great network of clients that had seen me in action and really respected my work. And when I came to them and started to ask them about, you know, whether they had people that they think would benefit from my coaching and telling them about my new work, like more times than not, they'd be like, you don't want to do that. You want this big job I can give you. You know, like I thought I was going in to talk about my coaching services and I was getting sort of solicited to take a big job with them. And I was really hurt at the beginning because I was like, I just want a small mandate with you and you want to give me this big job. You know, why will you give me this big job if you won't give me this small mandate? You know, like it was just really funny at the beginning. And so there was a little bit of a delay between when, you know, the market kind of accepted that I was for real in terms of this being the move that I really wanted to make. So, yeah, I'm sure we could swap stories on that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I sort of told people, especially starting out, you're going into it and no matter how prepared you are, maybe you found this to be true too, you know, you're still walking somewhat faithfully and blindly, you know, into the Absolutely. Future, especially making that the transition I'm talking about is obviously getting to the coaching, you know, realm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, given the timeline of this, even to this day, and we talk about it on, and probably will on most every one of these shows, it's still kind of this little known niche, although growing mm-hmm. quickly, right? Where it doesn't surprise me that you had some of those conversations or those meetings where they were going in expecting one thing or saying, hey, you know, she's a coach. This is fancy title. We're going to offer a lot of money to come and work for us. But it's like, no. I'm, you know, I'm kind of my own brand. I'm my own
entity. Yeah.
You know, did you find that a lot for yourself and any other particular cases that really stand out to you as mile markers as you made this huge leap of yours?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think it was, you know, I guess I thought, you know, we all think we're more prepared for it than we think, right? And yet the process of going into coaching, you know, both running my own business, but also just the deep work of coaching, you know, I don't do anything to my clients that I haven't done to myself. So, you know, that whole process of, you know, just the reflection and the really, really, really looking at, you know, my beliefs, my values, what I really want to contribute in this world, like just all that stuff that, that, you know, we revisit to make sure. I think when I look back and the story is kind of funny, actually, I make it sound like it was all very planned. It really wasn't. I was out to dinner with my husband celebrating a performance bonus. We were having champagne at my favorite sushi restaurant. And he simply said, you look a little sad. And I said, I'm working on getting my team in place. I got to transform this department, you know, this, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm just a little preoccupied. And he said, oh, I know you. In 18 months, you'll have the place, you know, ticking and you'll have the right people and you'll motivate the heck out of them and you're going to deliver. Don't worry about it. And I said to him, yeah, you're right. I just wish I could snap my fingers and wish the next 18 months of my life away. And I said that in like this, what I thought was a really rational thing to say, because in 18 months I'd have my team in place and I'd get, you know, this place, you know, the transformation I was trying to drive for the company would be in place. And my husband really freaked out and said, you want to wish the next 18 months of our lives away? And I didn't mean our lives, right? I meant just the work part.
Right. Sure.
And so I tried to backpedal a bit and then he said, you know, something's wrong if you're really feeling that way, because in 18 months, you're going to be promoted. I've watched your career every 18 months to 2 years, you're promoted. So if you're not enjoying this anymore, you should quit. And I don't know what happened. I lit up in me where I was like, I can quit. Like I didn't really think about that. I was like, I don't quit. I do a good job and I get promoted. That's what I do. That's my shtick. But I don't know. I just was like, can I quit? Wow. Like I could quit and do anything I want. And he's like, yeah, you've done everything you've ever put your mind to. You've always succeeded at everything. If you don't want to be doing this, you ought to be doing what you want to do. And so I literally quit. Like I texted my boss and said, I got to talk and I quit. And the first thing he said was, oh, I guess you've given this a lot of thought, which was comical because I hadn't given it any thought. So I really did. not a best practice. I don't recommend it, but I really did sort of jump off without a parachute. But I couldn't be more thrilled that I did, because it really supported me in, you know, an incredible accelerated growth, and also to discover work that I adore.
Man.
Well, you know, it's interesting that's very, I really resonate with your story, Marissa, because that's similar to how I left the corporate world. And you know, it's, what is the old adage, you know, burn the boats and take the island. Sure as hell is no better way to move forward on your next career path until you burn the boats of your former career, you know?
It was messy. Absolutely. It was messy. And when I look back on it now, I realize that, you know, I had not navigated my career the way I should have. I was having a huge motivation crisis. I was trying to do everything on discipline instead of on sort of inspiration and motivation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was a prime candidate for sort of like an overhaul. And so, you know, this process has been sort of fixing me. As I serve my clients.
Wow.
Yeah. Well said.
So with that said, I mean, I want to talk about what you do, but I'm fascinated because I want to ask you this question about, cause a lot of people go, they make the shift, they make the leap into coaching, and oftentimes, sadly, oftentimes it either A, it doesn't work for them, and or B, it takes a super long time for them to kind of get into the groove. And I want to ask you this, because your skill set is so diverse and your education is so diverse, all the way from engineering to an MBA to having a partner level position at a major firm. What, when you stepped off this cliff or precipice or whatever, and you went in toward this coaching direction, what mindsets or what skills or what things did you execute on from your prior experience and knowledge that helped you get to where you are today, you know, with your speaking, with your book, and then building a practice? Talk a little bit of the process with that, if you could.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, what was added to the difficulty was that I was really building a new skill set as well. So, you know, I went through my coaching certification, was doing all of my, you know, hours and things like that. And I was really building my competencies in coaching as well. So I kind of took the first year as I am going to coach as many people as possible for, you know, little amounts of money and big amounts of money, depending on what they will, you know, agree to. And I will basically just throw myself into service to learn and explore. And that year, you know, I did really, really followed whoever showed up. In fact, I began deciding that I really wanted to work specifically with women leaders, because part of me was like, I was going to break my plan was breaking the glass ceiling. So if I'm not going to break it myself, I'm going to help other people break it. That was my first strategy, right? So I was like, I want to coach leaders. I want to coach women leaders. And it was very funny because I reached out to a whole bunch of women executives and also and sort of said, do you or someone you know think they'd benefit my coaching? And I got like a lot of like mediocre responses. You know, they were already well served, many of these organizations, by coaching practice. I mean, I knew they were well served because I had good coaches that served me when I was in these entities and stuff. So they were kind of like, what's different about you? And really the only thing that was different about me, you know, which I sort of, you know, kept sort of saying is, you know, when I was being coached, you know, my coaches were phenomenal people, but I must tell you that I was very distracted by the process because I kept thinking to myself, you've never had my job. You don't understand my reality. And what was very distracting to me was that they really didn't ever sort of have the kind of job. So I could come up with all kinds of excuses for why the shifts were not possible for me, because I questioned, you know, sort of their understanding of my situation. And so really what started to kind of what started to kind of stick and what started to be kind of, you know, my sort of differentiation was, you know, nobody could say, I don't get it, right? In terms of what these roles were like or what these, what the challenges were. But, you know, but what's funny was I almost only marketed it to women executives. And, but then I would call like my male executives and I'd say, do you have any women on your team you think would benefit my coaching? And they would say, why won't you coach me? And I was like, and I said horrible things like, because you're at the top of the food chain. And I wanted, you know, I just said horrible things. And they kind of said, well, you need to eat. And I really want you as a trusted advisor in my corner. So many of my first clients were kind of getting a bit of a hybrid service. They were getting my coaching, absolutely, but they were also getting my brain, access to my brain from a strategy perspective, from whatever kind of, you know, from, you know, sort of applying all of my consulting skills. And over the, over time, so that sort of helped me eat, you know, because they were kind of like, and you need to eat. So, so I really did kind of do more of a hybrid initially, in terms of what I would call sort of strategy or business coaching, and executive coaching, you know, really being that ear. And now I've really migrated, you know, kind of very much more sort of pure coaching. I do a lot, frankly, on influencing skills, co-creating skills, relationship, sort of what we would call managing the politics, that are really, really real for people in terms of corporations and their ability to collaborate and lead teams to drive the results that they need to lead. I mean, we live in a world now that problems are sufficiently complex, the volume is sufficiently high that you can make or break your career based on how you're able to lead in team.
Yes. That is, yeah, that's so true. So these unsuspecting male clients are, you know, it's interesting because water seeks its own level. Here you thought you wanted to go into, you know, see the female clients, but then the male clients were actually responding to you as well. So that's the thing that's really interesting about coaching, is that sometimes we have an idea of who we think our clients are going to be, and sometimes that takes an interesting turn.
Yeah, and what's so funny to this day, Bruce and Justin, I do track it, and I'm always 50-50, almost exactly like 55-45 in terms of the percentage male-female. So I have an absolute, you know, balanced portfolio accidentally. Which is kind of fun.
Well, that's great. That's great. So what, tell us a little bit about, who is your modal client? Who is the client that, that you see most often, if you could characterize that, and how did they find you? How did you get them? And what are, and you've already talked about relationships. So you might've talked about some things you already work on, but talk a little bit about your most frequently occurring client.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, because I had a background, you know, Accenture's a huge IT systems integrator, shop, right? And because I was also on the operations side, and I'm an engineer, you know, by training, kind of my favorite and my ideal and my most common, sort of prototype clients are people that are from technical backgrounds that are in leadership or executive roles. So, you know, they're either engineers or they could have a finance background, but they're very analytical by nature, and they're very, very substantive in terms of their content and what I would call their hard skills, right? So they're really, they've kind of come up, you know, they have amazing subject matter expertise in general, and they sort of have a very substantive skill set. And that I love that client because, you know, I share that love of sort of hard and fast, you know, kind of a mathematical world where there's a right answer. and yet, you know, and really what I support them with is dealing with some of the sort of subtler issues that you run into when it comes to influencing, when it comes to, you know, maybe identifying, you know, call it slightly suboptimal solutions that create the alignment required in an organization, right? So, you know, sometimes we, as sort of technical, analytical people, we really gravitate to a solution at the expense of, you know, involving other people, making it win-lose, you know, really sort of not creating the right dynamic. So, you know, we let perfect get in the way of done or good, you know? And so a lot of that's sort of my favorite, is where I kind of crack open that notion of, you know, I know the right answer all the time, and sort of start to say, you know, well, what is the alignment that you need? You know, what is an equally good answer? There are many paths to Rome, right? And how do we sort of reduce their addiction to being right, so that they can actually increase their influence in the organization?
Good point. Yeah. So I've run across that a little bit myself. I've had people that were in data analytics or maybe logistics and supply chain and in industries and manufacturing. And then all of a sudden they're great content area experts. They're great brains. They're great minds. But man, when it came to leading teams or diverse teams or running against conflict, you know, we ran into some issues and really relied on some communication skills and some other types of ways of viewing human interaction to improve the overall picture of what was going on. So I can appreciate what you're saying there. And again, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I'm more of a behavioral health guy trained, you know, in clinical psychology and whatnot, and you know, avoided like the plague calculus and all the other fun things. Not really, because I went to Texas A&M for my undergraduate, but still, as much as I could. But now,
you picked a great specialty, though. I've been converted, so I just came to it late. But
exactly. I know in 2008, when people were complaining, you know, they were, a lot of my Motorola engineer friends had had their jobs outsourced to China, and meanwhile, the psych major was doing quite well. No, I didn't get outsourced, man. I'm over here. Shout out to my haters. But you know, that's true. We have not haters, or we have people that are detractors, or people that look at coaching. I know I got, you know, all my clinical psychology friends are like, "Ooh, that's like crystals, and are you going to wear Birkenstocks now and grow more hair under your armpits?" I'm like, "No, you know, I mean, what are you talking about?" You know, so. It is interesting. And you know what? I see ourselves as coaches. I think Justin might, you know, embrace it. I see myself as a consultant. I see myself as a one-man consultant firm. Well, with a small F or something. But, you know, I am literally that person that's called in there to consult the person, either with, you know, personal, professional, and sometimes it applies to a larger context in a corporate or for Justin, an entrepreneurial effort. So I like that. So okay.
Yeah, I see it the same way, Bruce, by the way. You know, I do. You know, so I sort of see the consultant as working across the organization. The consultant, you're sort of working in a, you know, one-on-one fashion, but you're still maybe working through organizational challenges, you know, that they're facing on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis. So, you know, the terms are somewhat synonymous. To me, it's just the more the individualized attention, you know, merits the coach, you know, term or title to it.
Yeah. And the other thing I'll just add is sort of, as you asked about sort of growing the business. I mean, one of the things that really surprised me and also has become an increasingly big percentage of my revenue is speaking and training. And really that came out of me working one-on-one and solidifying my tool set. So, I mean, my book, Work Smart, has got 50 skills in it across 9 areas that, you know, I just felt like I was working with people over and over and over again with. So this was just sort of my, oh my goodness, pattern recognition as I was working with my clients. And I wanted to just write down like all the things I'm working on and organize them in a structured way, because my brain was like sort of, I need to organize all these things, right? So, you know, So my book is really very much like very practical sort of tips that I and tools that I just found myself repeating with clients over and over again. And what would happen in my coaching sessions is I would teach a tool and, you know, very simple framework or something, or just a way to look at something, or, you know, I'm a consultant, so a 2x2 matrix on just about anything, right? I sort of think my way through. And then they would be like, oh my God, can you teach this to my team? Or, oh my God, can you teach this to this department? And so I started to get demand from my individual clients to sort of educate their teams or their groups or their organization around specific areas that were of interest to them, because they really wanted to be able to have shared language around facing these kinds of issues. Shared language, for instance, around, you know, what is it, what are listening, what are best practices around listening skills, you know, or what are best practices around, you know, our, you know, just sort of the, and now it'll be called the growth mindset, of course, with Carol's work, but what is the right headspace around staying opportunity oriented when you're in the face of sort of challenges, you know, difficult challenges or stretch goals within an organization? How do you, you know, how do you think about things to be able to enable your best thinking? How do you get collective intelligence out of the group? You know, so all these sort of concepts. And what grew out of that was really my workshops as well as my speaking that has been, you know, really fascinating for me. I mean, I think I learned the most from my one-on-one coaching, but having to teach it to a group refines my thinking so much more. It forces me to really, really get honed about the tactic and the applicability and, you know, and sort of generalized principles that I think, you know, really make the biggest difference.
Yeah, I like what you say about the speaking, and I just love, you can tell you come from a super, super smart consulting background on your website, right? Everything is just so clean, one of the cleanest WordPresses I've ever seen, but very nice. On your speaking, the leaderly, that's interesting. That's an interesting what...
Yeah, I'm switching. So I'm switching. Actually, you can look at my new website. My new website is www.leaderly.com. I'm rebranding. So I've been running under marissamurray.com, but I'm in the process of migrating to leaderly.com because I'm like all things leadership now. that's the migration I'm in the middle of.
What were some of the deciding factors there? You just wanted to have more leadership as your brand versus your name as your brand, or?
Yeah, I mean, you know what was funny? When I bought my name URL, it was the day after, well, not the day after, but it was when I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And all I knew was my name. I was like, well, I'm not going to change my name. So I'm going to, I'm just going to run it as my name for now. And so I was doing, you know, whatever kind of, I was doing more consulting, et cetera. And then as I really decided, like, this is my love, I decided this year that I was going to formally brand and try to be clearer to the market what I offer. Yeah.
Okay. It looks like much of the same material is just migrated.
It is.
Well, no, it looks very, very, very good. So, well, Justin, I mean, you're a branding person, right?
I guess so. You know, no, I love it. And I think what Marissa points out, and by the way, I love what you said about the book. You know, maybe you found this to be true too. It's sort of like your initial playbook, you know, a book or your model. Right. Some have a certain model or selling model or consulting model. It's sort of like your initial playbook to the market. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And oftentimes, you know, as we go through, and it's almost like a funnel, right? You just keep getting more and more refined on your messaging, clear on who your niche is. You oftentimes will develop, you know, further models from that. And I love that you're doing that. You know, similar experience. I rebranded myself about six to eight months ago, you know, pretty heavily in a mm-hmm. similar fashion, right? So I appreciate anyone that does that because it's so necessary. And listen, we're never meant to be static as mm-hmm. individuals or as brands. The market changes, so why shouldn't we, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I mean, I think that, you know, it's funny. When I wrote Work Smart, I mean, for me, I was like, part of the attraction to Work Smart was, I just want this to be as, I want coaching and these tactics to feel as pragmatic and practical and useful as possible. And so I was just kind of in that headspace around, you know, again, serving clients that might be skeptical of the subtler, softer skills and just sort of saying like, no, this is real stuff. So that was kind of my pragmatic, but when people read my book, when I got lots of feedback on my book, people kept saying like, there's so much about leadership in this book. You should have called it. I think of the subtitles, like, it's your formula for unprecedented professional success. And they're like, this should be your formula for unprecedented leadership success. I mean, it's more about leadership than it was. So it was really my market that kind of said, you know, you're really doing more and more leader. But the way I think about leadership is, you know, you're leading self, you're leading others, and you're leading change. Like, you know, there's all those three components. And so, you know, even an individual needs to be a leader to themselves. And then, you know, they need to be able to lead others, and they need to be able to sort of drive the positive impact in the world by driving change.
Wow.
Absolutely. So well said.
Very well said. Now, I notice now you have coaching, and now I notice on your new site that you have consulting. Can you contrast? I mean, is coaching a part of your consulting, or are they two like orthogonally rotated, similar concepts?
So I added consulting because I've done a few mandates like this where they basically, you know, I started to develop a pretty precise point of view, I will call it, on what it takes, what best in class leadership looks like, leadership culture looks like. And if you click on the consulting tab, there's sort of 10 factors that I say are sort of, you know, this is what we're aiming for in a leader. I've had a few mandates where I've been asked to come in and assess their leadership culture. So I've built an assessment around, you know, this is the leader, you know, it's like survey. It's basically a survey, self-reflection survey that we send to the leaders. And I gain from that survey what the leadership tendencies are. I kind of create a report and sort of say, okay, here is where you're at. And here, in my humble opinion, is where you want to migrate to on a few different factors. And so it's, you know, the consulting piece comes to be of like, that's kind of the consulting piece. And then often it leads to some kind of either training or sort of role, you know, vision rollout or things like that. It can be something like that, or it can also be, you know, identifying specific people that require one-on-one mandate. So the consulting piece is really just this, this notion of what is your existing leadership culture and where might you want to migrate it based on the business objectives you're trying to drive.
Wow. That's really interesting, because that's just another service line. But on the Leaderly site, you're not really emphasizing speaking so much, I guess, right? It's more, you don't really have that.
Yeah, there is a training tab. I just tried to call it training, but it's, you know, it's speaking, it's workshops, it's any kind of training intervention. Yeah. So the consulting piece is still like, it's the newest. But I think the more I become really honed around what I think, again, you know, you hear my analytical side of what is the formula, right? What is the target? The more I see the value of sort of helping organizations reflect on the leaders, because here's the reality. The reality is, how did I become a leader? I was led by a whole bunch of people who modeled a whole bunch of tactics to me, many of which I picked up quite unconsciously. And some of them were amazing and some of them were less so, right? And so, you know, to me, I think that, and you know, I always laugh because if you look at most of our management techniques, they come with a whole bunch of analogies around either sports or war, right? And, you know, the reality is sports and war are rules-based things. You know, but we live in an environment now where, you know, we're not living in a rules-based thing. We're living in a knowledge economy. We're living where people's creativity, ingenuity, et cetera. And we want people to kind of disrupt markets. We don't want them to play by rules. So I think the kind of leader you need to be today in order to really, really develop your people is different than the historic models that we've been, you know, we've been modeling for a long time.
Good point. Good point. I also see the service lines also. I mean, the way that you've kind of pitched this or put this out with Leaderly, kind of a manifestation. Remember, I'm an old guy here, so I'm the rule guy. But anyway, but, you know, like I remember if you go back to Arthur Anderson and Accenture, you have the white space and the green space, right? So now if you kind of get in as a trainer, you can white space your services into coaching or even to consulting at the broader level. So, you know what I mean? Now you can engage with your, let's say you got a corporate client, right? You can engage with the client on multiple spheres and really kind of, you know, be of service to them in numerous capacities. And honestly, I'm a 1.5 trick pony, you know, in my practice right now. I'm working on two tricks, but seriously, you have a lot of different things that you can offer. That's just going to bode well for you as your practice grows, and you'll probably end up having to hire folks underneath you here at some point, at least in 2 years.
For sure. I mean, I'll tell you, you're absolutely right. You're in terms of my growth strategy, just to be transparent. I mean, I am very much like less clients, but more wallet share per client. For corporate client, because I just find, and I've seen this with consulting in my past, you know, the more you understand that dynamic, that client, that culture, that market, the more value you bring to that organization. So, you know, my skills can be applied broadly to many clients, but man, the ones I work with the most, I just get to know how they tick. And you know, that's when they come out of my sessions and they say, oh my God, it's like you work here, or that's uncannily, you just understand us in a way that makes, you know, that makes it so easy for us to implement what you're teaching because you get us, right? So I absolutely want to get to the point where, you know, I have less clients with much more value I can bring to each individual client.
Excellent. Yes, absolutely. So it's, you know, it's almost like the recovering alcoholic. Only you can say I was once a partner. Just kidding.
Yeah, I guess old habits die hard, right? So yeah.
I totally get it, man. Anyway, kind of. And there's your phone number finally on the consulting. Wow, I was frantically looking for your phone number.
I'm so sorry about that.
That's okay. No, there it is. So great. I like what you've done with these 10. How did you arrive at these 10 bullet points on consulting? One of them sounded kind of cut-ass, that seek to understand the impact of others while reconciling with their intentions. So yeah, talk a little bit about the formulation.
Yeah, they're absolutely still, you know, too gobbledygook sounding, and they continue to need refinement. How I arrived at these was, you know, once again, just kind of reflecting on the energy. You know, so much of my work is, you know, trying to decode, you know, trying to get a, it's so funny because I fight with my clients over efficiency versus effectiveness. I feel like so many of us are chasing, as you scale, you get more and more responsibilities and you try to get more and more disciplined and more productive and more efficient at everything. And I really do just feel like that's at the cost of your effectiveness and actually a lot of your motivation and also a lot of your creativity and potentially your collaboration skills. So, you know, the same act, you know, the same meeting, you know, when you kind of go into it and you sort of say, I have a very clear positive intention and I want to drive a very, very aligned outcome. And I want to allow the team to do their best thinking, which means they need to have a high sense of belonging and contribution. I want them to sort of live in, I always say, you know, are you in love, gratitude, or joy? You know, are you loving working with these people? Are you grateful for the opportunity, even if it's challenging, or are you just joyfully going through this exercise together? And, you know, and sort of it's the spirit, I believe, behind a lot of these leadership principles that hasn't been articulated. So that the same thing looks the same on the outside, but the energy behind it is so different and vastly more effective when we are playing in that space where we are just, in growth or contribution or, you know, just incredibly creating enjoyable experiences for us to create, the outcomes we're trying to drive. So, you know, it's me rolling around in how do you articulate the spirit behind a very normal thing like listening or a very normal thing like setting a stretch goal. And then how do you just sort of twist it so that that subtlety around the energy behind it or the way in which you go about it is present and obvious.
Right. Man, very dynamic.
Powerful.
And that's the thing. You really bring yourself to the service and to the, and that's why coaching to me is so wonderful, because it's everybody brings who they are as a person to deliver the coaching or the speaking, the training, the consulting, and even the videos, you know what I mean? And folks can make that connection. I know we have 3 minutes left before we have to do end the show. So Marissa, if you could, if you don't mind, share with our listeners how they can, the various points or social media or websites that they can reach you at.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a big LinkedIn user. That's my biggest social media platform. So if you just look for me, Marissa Murray on LinkedIn. As I mentioned, I'm moving to Leaderly as the brand, but I'm still actively using my marissamurray.com website. And I would love for your listeners, if there's interest, I'd be very happy to send them an audio version of the book, a link to download an audio version of the book if they're interested. And they can do that by just emailing me at Marissa, which is 1R1S, at marissamurray.com, and I'll fire a link off to them for them to get a chance to listen to the book. I love, obviously, to hear feedback from other coaches on tools that they enjoyed or that they resonated with. And I love connecting with coaches. So, it's such an incredible community. I'm so happy to be a part of it now.
Well, we are glad that we found you to be part of our show and part of the community here.
Absolutely.
And wow. Marissa, just so y'all know, we didn't have a chance to pregame or pre-production, nothing, man. We just came up on this thing with a couple of emails. Like, what's your number, man? Anyway, but
come on, Bruce. This isn't her first rodeo.
we did it, man. We did it. So, well, again, Marissa, thanks for coming on the show today and really, just a lot of food for thought. I really like what you're doing. I like, I just like how you think and just, on point and on time, man. And I just, wish you all the best. Maybe have you come on the show a year from now and tell us what all you're doing or come on later, you know what I mean? And check in with it and give us.
I would love that. Yeah. I would love that.
Are very, accomplished, smart, and dynamic, and I wish you the best. We wish you the best on everything.
Great. Well, thank you both so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. I feel like we could talk all day. It flew by. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, you are so welcome. So again, folks, another great show here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. So make sure you check us out on our social media at Concierge Coaches Show. And folks, these shows are all archived on the LA Talk Radio website. You can go to our own page at latalkradio.com/content/concierge-coaches-show. If you can remember all that, I'm sure you're a genius, but come on there and see our page and check us out. And more importantly, we're on iTunes. So this show and all of our shows are available for you for free to view on iTunes, and each has a little show summary with it. So you can listen to prior podcasts and not be missing out on anything. So with that said, we'll bid everybody a great week here, and we'll see you next time here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Have a good week, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.